Good evening and welcome into the Sports Drive on ESPN Pensacola. Happy to have you along for the show today. Oh my heavens, do we have a lot to dive into. You are going to hear in this show Brian Kelly, Mike Norvell, Billy Napier, Heather Dinich, CJ Stroud, Nick Saban, among many others, Myron Metcalf. We're diving through this entire weekend of college football. And we're not done yet. We got one more game tonight. Also, this week going to be previewing the NFL season today. It's going to be the AFC East and the NFC East. Going to tell you who I think is going to win the division and how things are going to shape up. Also, one burning question for each team and where they're at in the ESPN power rankings for the preseason. Also, of course, we are talking about UWF, a massive victory, dominant win over Warner. More details on that. And Jarrett Leggett, let's talk about a good connection. I'll tell you what, very, very impressive this weekend for the Argos. Also going to be diving into some other stuff with the Saints and Jaguars in particular, and Serena Williams, a crazy weekend with the U.S. Open. Right now, American Francis Tiafoe is beating Rafael Nadal in the round of 16. We'll keep you updated on that, as well as much, much more. But first, as always, here are three things you need to know.
Number three pulls off three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good!
4-3!
I don't know. Third base!
Three things you need to know.
Number one, the Dallas Cowboys have signed Jason Peters, 40-year-old Jason Peters, to be their proverbial left tackle after they lose Smith. For a very long time. Peters, experienced, older though. Look, he might be one of the better guys on the market. We'll have to see how he does, but Dallas making that signing. Big Ben says Mitchell Trubisky should start. The Steelers would be in agreement with Big Ben as the depth chart has come out, and Mitchell Trubisky is listed as QB1. Trubisky also a captain for the Steelers team. They open up against the Cincinnati Bengals this Sunday. And then number three, Margaret Court. Going to talk about this a little bit later in the show when I'm talking about Serena Williams and the other things that came from the weekend. But she said Serena has snubbed her, that she pays Serena respect, but she lacks to return the favor. Interesting there. Serena second all time to Margaret Court's 24 major or Grand Slam wins all time, but I don't know. It might just be some hurt feelings over something that really isn't that big of a deal. And I don't think Serena's snubbing any respect towards the greats in tennis, but apparently Margaret Court feels that way. That's three things you need to know. So I want to start off this first segment by talking about Florida State and Florida. I'm also going to tell you in the next segment where I was right about things over the weekend, because I told you on Friday there was a segment, five things to expect this weekend. And I'll tell you what, I think I delivered on all five, I'll be honest. But there's three in particular that we got from my list of five. I'll tell you a little bit more about what those things were on or in of the next segment. Going to be talking about the entire college football weekend as well next, after this first one, diving into particulars with the Noles and with the Gators. Holy crap. I mean, look, you get UCF who wins. You get Miami who wins. You get Florida who wins. You get FSU who wins. And maybe, again, FSU is not happy Miami won and vice versa and all that, but the state of Florida is very happy after this weekend. Massive wins. A couple of upsets, if you will. FSU over LSU, not too much of an upset, but something that I said prior to this weekend was that both of these teams would play their opponents tight. FSU did that to LSU. Florida certainly did that to Utah. Obviously, both of them getting the win. We'll get to Florida in a second, but I want to stick to FSU first. A massive win. Absolutely massive win. So, as crazy a last 2 minutes as you could ask for. FSU's got to punt the ball. A muffed punt leads to FSU getting the ball on like the 10. They get down to the goal line, and all of a sudden, fumble! LSU gets on it. 99 yards in a minute and 20 seconds. Jaden Daniels, right down the field. They score a touchdown. And look, everybody, including myself, I think, thought, okay, here we go, free football. As Corso would say, not so fast, my friend.
Florida State 24, LSU 23. The freshman, Damian Ramos, for the extra point and the biggest kick of his life thus far. The snap is back. The hold is down. The kick is low. It's no good. No good. Florida State has won in New Orleans. The final score, the Seminoles 24 and the Tigers 23.
Ah, he blocked the field goal again. I'll tell you what, man. Special teams, what a job. We focus a lot of our time on offense and defense and everything like that, but special teams, whether it be the gunners, whether it be the long snapper, whether it be the holder, the kicker, whoever. Special teams are a really big deal, and every now and then we get a game that is like this where it is very much a win or lose situation coming down to special teams. They block one field goal. They block the extra point here. Just a stud performance from FSU with special teams. They come through multiple times, and they get the job done. They get the job done. And I'm not, look, this was not the best statistical game for FSU or for LSU for that matter. But again, that's not what particularly FSU is focused on. That, you know, you hear last week Lawrence Toafili and Trey Benson in the running back room, they're talking about how they love to see each other do well, and they celebrate, and they know that everybody's going to have a role to play, and they succeed in that role. And it's not about me. A spectacular culture that Mike Norvell's really implemented with this group, and that's something that I'll get to Florida in a second that Billy Napier is looking to do. But you look at what has occurred over the last couple of weeks with FSU, and I don't know if they're necessarily back. But good grief, what a way to start the season. Rebounding from what the disaster of a season they started with last year with that heartbreaking loss to Notre Dame, and then they lose to Jacksonville State 0-2. Now they're 2-0, and things are looking really, really good for FSU. Still have, you know, a ways to go, obviously, but it's a perfect start. It is a perfect start. Here's FSU coach Mike Norvell after the game on that final play and that blocked extra point.
Even in that moment, it came down to one play, and our guys rose to the occasion for that last play. And so very proud of them. You know, there'll be a lot to grow from this game. Quality opponent, a lot of draft picks out there on that field, and you know, our guys they rose to the occasion.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that was quite, look, the battle in the trenches. How are things going to go? You're dealing with an SEC team compared to an ACC team. That to me didn't matter. It was LSU doesn't have many starters at all coming back. They've got a question mark at quarterback. Brian Kelly's first year at LSU. All the expectation. How good are they actually? I mean, there's so many questions with that team. And I wonder this. How important the game was previously against Duquesne? I know it was against Duquesne, but Mike Norvell was asked about how big it was to have a game under their belt prior to this game against LSU. Here's what he had to say.
You know, just being able to go out there and the communication, the sense of urgency, the adjustments and different things that show up in a first game. You know, we were able to, to get those experiences, and you know, it wasn't all great, or things that we definitely had to clean up on, and really gave us a true focus of ourselves and areas that we needed to improve this week in practice. But you know, I think our guys have done a nice job with that, and you know, we've got to come out this week and be much better than what we were a week ago, even though we were able to accomplish the objective that we had.
And again, I mean, it's easy to say a win is a win, and technically it is. And it was a gutsy one. Again, not the most statistically great performance. I mean, they ran the ball well collectively. Jordan Travis played well. They didn't turn the ball over outside of the fumble, of course. Jordan Travis didn't individually. Didn't have any picks. Had some really nice throws. There's a lot to like and to take from this. Against a good opponent, as Mike Norvell said early on in the year. You're going to hear from Brian Kelly in just a minute, but we talk about FSU being back, and I mentioned that, but and I think we need to be steadfast in that approach. However, given, as I said, the way that things started last year and, you know, Travis Hunter flipping to Jackson State off of FSU and, you know, the questions going in, is Mike Norvell on the hot seat? I mean, he's got to get to a bowl game. FSU's got to do it, otherwise he's gone. You know, I wouldn't qualify this as one of those wins that was just, they absolutely had to have it, but golly, this is a big, big win for Mike Norvell and for this program. Here's what Mike Norvell had to say on how big the win was for this program.
It's big for everybody because, you know, we did have a great stage to put on display the identity of what I believe this team is made up of. And it's young men with character that love to work, that believe in each other, that they believe in the process. And I would have liked to have probably finished that game a lot cleaner than what we did. And as I've said before, sometimes you need to go through what you need to prove you can get through.
And again, look, could it have been handled a little bit better? Not as tense, probably. You just had to kneel three times and then kick the field goal and then things would have been done instead of try to punch it into the end zone. But you live with that decision and you die with it. And fortunately for FSU, they live with that decision. And the special teams, again, made such a key play down the stretch. Jared Verse, a dude that had a sack last week, just some big plays this week. Again, the transfer from Albany, he didn't look like he ever belonged at a place like Albany. And FSU, he's already getting his Seminole career off to a really good start. He was asked about his performance after the game was done.
The outstanding transfer from Albany. You got one of those kicks earlier. Describe special teams and what it meant for you all tonight, the third phase of this game.
I mean, y'all see it yourselves. Special teams can change the game. I got one. They needed a point to score or to tie the game, overtime. And my boys came off the edge, handled business.
Catch your breath for a second, big fella. You came from Albany to play in games like this. Why Florida State, and what does a moment like this mean to you now being 2-0?
Well, when I got to Florida State, I knew it was something special. I mean, you see it right here. What we just did, that was a performance. We made mistakes, that won't happen again. But it's something special here. We back. Florida State back.
What does that mean to you when you say that?
I mean, we the whole Florida State. Everybody on the team, a dog. From the safeties, to the centers, to the long snappers, to the kickers, the QB, the DN, every last position, the dog.
When you look at your quarterback and Travis Jordan and also your head coach and Mike Norvell, what kind of attitude do they bring to this team to have you be able to win games like we just saw, which was, well, just epic?
Coach Norvell, he's the only guy I know that has more energy than me. He comes in every day yelling, screaming. Right there, he was yelling, screaming, go like, we got to get this. We need to get this. What we did, we went and got it. Jay Child was right there on the sideline screaming. Why would we got that? We needed this.
I'll tell you, he's such a good dude. And you could tell. This is the thing about some of these guys, and this will transfer me right into LSU. You can tell when guys really care about the game and the team and everybody involved. And I think that's what we've got, as I said, with Mike Norvell, who has implemented that culture in. Now, Keyshawn Booty, look, dude. Jane Daniels threw an absolute dot right on his number, and instead of catching it, it hit his number, and he dropped the pass. He dropped another one as well, dropped a couple, I believe, in this game. Afterwards, he no longer has got any sign of LSU on his Instagram page. What's going on? My guy, you had some drops. You're expected to be in the first round. I don't know if NFL scouts are watching this game. Like, excuse me? This guy's out here dropping passes like that. Attitude's clearly not right. You're deleting teams off your Instagram in association with the team that you still play for. Come on now. Come on. It's not a good look. Here's what Brian Kelly had to say after the loss.
I was proud of our resolve. We battled. But, you know, we just have to learn how to play the game the right way. And that is for four quarters. We didn't play with the kind of sense of urgency that I want for four quarters, and that was evident in our play. We didn't tackle very well. We couldn't get off the field on third down. We didn't execute very well offensively.
Yep, and credit FSU for that, but also some early mistakes. Maybe, again, we go back to that game against Duquesne. It is against a bad opponent, an opponent you should beat, as FSU did, but that can help you get some of the nicks and bruises of the season again. Okay, we screwed up here. This is what we got to be better at. Get you more in tune. Okay, we got a game under our belt. It helps. Transitioning quickly to Florida. Holy crap, what a game this was. Florida goes down the field. Utah goes down the field. Florida goes down the field. Utah, it goes all the way down to like the two or the three, and then they get their pick, and the game's over with. Oh my heavens, what a win this was. Look, I'm going to tell you this right now. A great way for Billy Napier's Florida Gator career to start. Anthony Richardson has absolutely got some Lamar Jackson in him. People were saying Cam Newton. I don't think so. I think he's more of a playmaker than what Cam Newton was. He's bigger. He's size-wise like Cam. But in terms of making plays on your feet regularly and be able to make throws, Lamar Jackson, again, won the Heisman Trophy. Cam won the Heisman Trophy. Size-wise, Anthony Richardson is like Cam Newton. I think he's more shifty, more agile, and he's faster than Cam. He's more like a Lamar Jackson to me than he is a Cam Newton, having watched him play. He does nothing but make plays for his team. Even like the two-point conversion, the pump fake, you avoid the pressure and you throw to a wide-open guy in the end zone for the two-point conversion. Plays made down the stretch. We talk about Anthony Richardson. We talk about the defense and the interception at the end. An absolutely spectacular game, both of them, for FSU and for Florida. This is a win that is hopefully something that Florida Gator fans will see more often this year. We'll have to see. They get that first taste of SEC play under Billy Napier against Kentucky. The Gators actually favored, I believe, by a touchdown is what it was last night. Kentucky will be ranked in the top 25. I would assume Florida would be as well when the AP poll comes out, which to my knowledge, obviously it has not come out yet because Clemson is still set to play tonight against Georgia Tech. So we still got one more game. So it'll come out tomorrow. And I'll be giving you my top 25 as well. But Florida ought to be in there, obviously. Utah are a good team. This is the thing that we're learning about this as well. Utah are a good team. Florida, though, I think have really bought into what Billy Napier has brought to the table for them. And I think that when you get a team, again, to believe in a certain coach and what they're doing, not that they didn't believe in Dan Mullen, but there's just something about Mike Norvell coming from Memphis and the chip that you have on your shoulder in a way and the culture that you want to implement. As some would say, you're not born on third base. Billy Napier, exact same thing. Yes, he's worked with Nick Saban and worked with many other good coaches, but he comes from Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. You know, that foundation of a group of five school, having to work your way up, gain respect. Nothing is really any more different here. It's a lot nicer than a situation Billy Napier has been with because he's got more talent. So you take what has worked there and do it with more talent, you're going to be good. And I think Florida delivered, obviously, on that very, very good win for them. Absolutely a statement victory for Billy Napier in his first year as the Florida Gators head coach, the first game under his belt. Here was Coach Napier after the game.
Coach, in an incredible atmosphere in your first game here, what did your team show you tonight?
Man, I'm going to say the same things I said to the team. I'm so thankful for their work, right? I'm so thankful for their trust. I mean, that's a strong word, but that's what this game requires. Get a leadership opportunity like this, you quickly realize how important it is to surround yourself with great people. That's what we got here. We got great administration. We got a great staff. We got an unbelievable group of players that has really worked hard and trusted us, and I'm thankful for that.
Every time Utah scored, Anthony Richardson and that offense had an answer for it. How did they do it?
Well, I think we're figuring out here this Anthony Richardson guy is pretty good, right? So, you know, I've been impressed with him. We see the physical things, but the guy's a humble guy. He's selfless. He has worked so hard, man. I mean, he's from Gainesville, Florida. He's dreamed of this his entire life. And respond. What a competitor. Special.
Appreciate it. Congratulations. I see your family. Go enjoy it.
All right. Thank you.
That's the thing. And no offense to Cam Newton. Cam Newton's a little bit about himself, I think. Lamar is a more humble dude. I think Anthony Richardson fits that mold a little bit more than Cam Newton, for sure. And again, just a spectacular game from him. Again, predicted to go in the first round. Harry Douglas, real quick, of ESPN Radio before we go to break. Here's what he had to say about Anthony Richardson.
Anthony Richardson, you talk about 6'4", about 200, between 200, 235 pounds, elusive, athletic, fast, can run, strong arm. I think about a guy named Cam Newton. I think he's more athletic than Cam Newton, though. Yep. But I watched this guy this past weekend against Utah, who has a really good team, offensively, defensively, and on special teams. But Anthony Richardson, time and time again, made plays, threw 468 yards, also ran for over 100 yards and 3 touchdowns to help Florida come back and win that football game. And a lot of people said before this season that he could possibly go in the first round. I think after his first game, he's not only going to go in the first round, but I think he's going to be a top 10 pick.
Again, top 10 pick. That's great. If he even goes. We'll have to see how that goes. Coming back after the break, we're going to recap more of the college football weekend, some of the biggest games. Also, I'm going to tell you why there's nothing that beats college sports. There is absolutely nothing. Nothing. Even the NFL, even the NBA, nothing beats college sports. I'll tell you why next as the Sports Drive continues right here on ESPN Pensacola. All right. I'll tell you what. Francis Tiafoe just knocked off Rafael Nadal. Major upset in the U.S. Open. 2-seed Rafa goes down to 22. American seed Francis Tiafoe. Big ups to Francis for that win. What a job by him. Speaking of upset wins, we had so many of them over the weekend. Some of them, of course, not necessarily quote-unquote ranked teams, among ranked teams. We have had some teams who were unranked that challenged ranked teams, Florida being one of them, in the end, winning over number 7 Utah. But some of these games, I'll tell you, the best games of the weekend, I would tell you, are these. UNC and App State, if you did not watch that game between the Tar Heels and Mountaineers, you messed up. You missed out on one of the wildest games. So App State, at one point in this game, they dropped 61 points. They went scoreless for 32 minutes of the 60. They get the ball. They get an onside kick. They score a touchdown. They go for two. They don't get it. That would have taken the lead, actually. So they do the onside kick. UNC gets it and returns it for a score. So no time is taken off, barely at all. App State goes right down the field again, gets a touchdown, and they go for two. And they don't get it again. Chase Bryce just overthrows the intended receiver. And in heartbreaking fashion, App State fall to UNC 63-61. Oh my heavens. What a wild game that was. App State were actually picked by a number of people to beat North Carolina. And that game did not disappoint at all. Another game that didn't disappoint, and I don't know how to feel about this one. Number 13, North Carolina State, on the road in Greenville, North Carolina, taking on ECU. Wolfpack come away, avoid a scare, 21-20. But ECU played well throughout that game. You could even say maybe even better than the Wolfpack did and could have won that game most definitely. I don't know if it says that ECU maybe is a little bit better than people thought or NC State's a little bit more vulnerable. Maybe the team isn't as good going in as some people thought. Another game that I said would be good was Arkansas and Cincinnati. That game was close the entire way. Number 19, Arkansas getting the victory. KJ Jefferson played well. Cincinnati looked good, but not quite good enough. Number 23, Cincy falling to Arkansas, who's ranked 19th in the country over the weekend, 31-24. Houston and UTSA, triple overtime victory for the Cougars. Houston are a really good football team, 24th in the country. UTSA, again, almost went undefeated last year. Almost did. They returned Frank Harris, their star quarterback, and they were playing at UTSA in San Antonio. I'll tell you what, that game, you could have put a Houston on upset alert. Unranked, UTSA played them tight. And Florida, of course, getting the victory over Utah. Already talked about that one a little bit. Just an absolutely phenomenal victory that was. Here's Trevor Maddich of ESPN on Florida getting that upset.
A quality win for Florida because this Utah team is that good. They are that physical. And Utah was one play away from winning the game three different times.
Yes.
And Florida made those plays. And you've got to give a lot of credit to Florida because the big question was quarterback Anthony Richardson. Richardson was a guy that people said, great talent, inconsistent, don't know what you're going to get. And that was fair in the past. But in this game, he came out like a seasoned field generally, and keep this in mind too, normally I don't like to talk about stats, but there's a rating called quarterback rating, QBR, mm-hmm. which rates not just your throwing, but your running and when you do things in situations. 100 is perfect. 50 is average. Richardson was 94.8 against one of the best defenses in the country, with one of the best defensive brain trusts in the coaching room in the country, fully healthy. And so Florida fans right now have a lot to be excited about.
Absolutely. That is a heck of a victory for the Gators. 29-26, their win over a really good Utah team in the Swamp. The other good game was Ohio State and Notre Dame. I thought that Ohio State would cover late. I was impressed with Notre Dame's defense and being able to limit Ohio State. And again, this is nothing against Ohio State. They're going to be very good come November. They will be very good. I think it shows it's impressive the way that they finished. And also, that if this Ohio State team was the team from last year, I think Notre Dame win this football game. Because Ohio State's defense struggled last year to stop teams. I think the last year's Ohio State team against this Notre Dame team would lose. But this team is much more improved defensively. Jim Knowles has got his defense rolling as the DC. That's a smart move by Ryan Day to bring him in. And the offense found a way to push through, even with the loss of Jackson Smith and Jigba, who could be out a couple of weeks now. C.J. Stroud was asked about how the team regrouped after Jackson Smith and Jigba went out.
First of all, I just want to give all glory to God. This is a hard-fought win. I love my brothers, man. This is what we did in the offseason, man. It was a tough win, and we're a tough team, so that's why we try to prove tonight. But without Jackson, it was very tough. But, man, the young guy stepped up really big. JB stepped up huge. X had an amazing catch on that fourth down, cover zero. But he had to go win it all, and I just appreciate my team for sticking with me. It wasn't perfect by me or the team, and Notre Dame played hard, but we came out with the victory.
This is the good thing about these games, too, is you get a test early on. Like, this is going to help Notre Dame. It's going to help Ohio State in the long run. Again, Notre Dame's got a difficult enough schedule that if they go 11-1 and this is their only loss and Ohio State runs the table, Notre Dame absolutely has a case to make the playoff as that fourth team without a doubt, 100%. Is that actually going to happen? Don't know. But if they go undefeated the rest of the way and they finish 11-1 and OSU run the table, it's a very impressive game, I think, from Notre Dame. Tyler Buchner played pretty well as well. That was one of the question marks that I had for the Notre Dame team coming in. A very impressive game, I think, from Notre Dame, even though they do lose 21-10. Heather Dinich talked about this game from both the perspective of Ohio State and Notre Dame, one of the best games from this weekend.
Notre Dame should still be talked about in the college football conversation. That defense was outstanding in the first half. I don't think Ohio State fans should be panicking at all. I thought Ryan Day had a great message post-game, which was we had to gut it out and win in a way we weren't used to. And to be able to play defense, run the ball. Man, guys, Harry, you were there. That fourth quarter drive that lasted 7 minutes. And C.J. Stroud in that moment completing 9 of 10 passes in the fourth quarter was outstanding. But to me, the big takeaway was Notre Dame just put forth such a gutsy effort. Let's keep talking about them until they give us a reason not to.
Notre Dame absolutely played well. Again, this is not they lost the game because they stink and they're Notre Dame. I told you before, Notre Dame could keep this thing close up until I thought the fourth quarter Ohio State would pull away. They ended up doing that, but it wasn't by much at all whatsoever. Notre Dame kept that thing close, and they are a good football team. This is not a knock on Ohio State. Now, they might drop in the rankings. I think they will outside of the top two. I think Alabama will stay where they are, and Georgia's definitely going to jump. Ohio State just based on looks, but both these teams are very good. Very, very good. The SEC, of note, won all but one game this weekend, and that was the loss that LSU had to FSU. So on Friday, I talked about this before the show that I would bring this up here. On Friday, I said that there were five things that you need to expect this weekend. One was FSU and Florida will play their teams tight. Yes, they did. A very good game between Ohio State and Notre Dame. That's right, it was low scoring, but oh man, some good football. Hard-nosed football. Another one, a look at how good this Georgia defense can or will be. My heavens. Yeah, they lose a lot of production. But oh my goodness, Kirby Smart has done what Nick Saban has done many times, and that is reloading the factory and putting the guys out there, and they are going to play, and they're going to play well. Exactly what happened. Holy crap, what a win for Georgia. Dominant over number 11 Oregon. Now, this is the thing, real quick. Going to talk about the playoff more tomorrow in expansion. This is a game that could have been a playoff game, potentially, if you're looking at top 12 based on how the rankings looked. A 49-3 game. That's not exactly what we want for the playoff, but teams are going to improve by the end of the year that hopefully we won't have games like this. I'm afraid we will or could. But again, the playoff needs to be expanded. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. But this is a top 12 game or top 11 teams playing against each other. Didn't look good. But I think that's more props to Georgia. Stetson Bennett also played phenomenally well in addition to that. But there was another one that I had. Actually, there were two more. At least one of the top 10 teams will assert themselves as for real this week. Well, Georgia did that. Alabama, sure, they won 55-0 against Utah State. Utah State were unranked probably like 70th or higher in the country in terms of ranking. Oregon were 11th, and Georgia, they stomped them, and then some. Also, one big upset, question mark? Yeah, we did. We got one. Florida beating Utah. So, that's where I was right this weekend. That's a wild weekend of college football. And I'm going to end with this before we go on to more talk about the NFL with the AFC East preview beginning the NFL preview for this upcoming season. College sports, there's nothing that beats college sports, I don't think. Because every single week or on a regular basis, you get weekends like we just had. You get games like we just had. We rarely ever have a weekend where, it's all right. You know, there's rarely a time that we shrug our shoulders and go, that weekend was okay. Every single week, there's something ridiculous that goes on. Nothing beats college football and college basketball. Some of the most unforgettable moments that you'll see in sports happen on a regular basis. That blocked kick for FSU, FSU fans are never going to forget that play. Anthony Richardson, fake pump faking, spinning around and throwing the pass on the two-point conversion. Nobody's going to forget that. Nobody's going to forget winning that game if you're a Florida Gator fan. And that was 2-1 weekend. The Appalachian State UNC game. Nobody's forgetting how ridiculous that game was. How that game just had so much insanity. Regular basis, college basketball, we have upsets all the time. People storm in the court. It's crazy. It's nuts. College sports give that to you. We don't see that as often in the NBA or in the NFL. That's what we see it, but it's not all the time. We see this stuff in college all the time. Things that you're not going to forget because they're that crazy. That's why college sports are absolutely the best. And mind you as well, Florida, congratulations. Let me give a round of applause to the fan base for not storming the field after you beat Utah. That's what winning programs do. I was so nervous that I've been watching this game, and I'm like, please don't storm the field, please. You're Florida, for God's sakes. Please, don't do it. And they didn't. The fan base, much, much respect to you for not storming the field after you beat number 7 Utah. That's what winning programs do. A losing program and a program that accepts whatever, 8-4 seasons, 9-3 seasons, would have stormed the field and acted like they won the stupid national championship. Good job. It's the first game of the year. Congratulations on the win. That was absolutely a massive victory, as was FSU's over LSU. But holy crap, what a weekend of college football. We're not done yet. You know what would be really crazy is if Georgia Tech actually won this game tonight. That ain't going to happen, though. I'll talk a little bit about that game later on. But up next, going through the NFL, AFC, and NFC East today. NFC East will come at 6. Up next, the AFC East. Who do I have finishing where in the division? Also, one burning question and where each team in the division ranks in ESPN's preseason power rankings. We're talking about that next as the Sports Drive continues right here on ESPN Pensacola. Back on the Sports Drive, the NFL season is only a few days away. Oh my heavens, we are full on into it. Football season, college, NFL, doesn't matter. We're talking about the AFC East today. At 6, it'll be the NFC East. Previewing each division in the NFL ahead of Thursday night's game and ahead of Sunday's games and the Monday night game between the Broncos and the Seahawks. It is going to be nuts. Cannot wait for it. Football is here. But okay, let's cut to the chase here. AFC East. Pretty obvious, the Buffalo Bills are the team that I am selecting to win the division. I don't think that should come as a surprise to many people. I guess the one question is, is this team destined to get to the Super Bowl this year? They haven't won a Super Bowl yet. They've gotten there a couple of times. I believe it was 4 years in a row. They made it, but didn't win a single one of them. Jim Kelly, Andre Reid, those guys, they got a lot of talent. Didn't quite get through the Chiefs in that thrilling game last year to get to the AFC Championship game. But something feels right about this team. Of course, I'm a Bengals fan, so I'm like, oh, you know what? I don't know about that. But this team just feels like, for some reason, they're going to be very, very, very good. At least in the AFC East, nobody's beating them in this division. The Miami Dolphins, I think, finished second. A question here is, how good can Tua be in Mike McDaniel's system? I think he's going to help Tua elevate his play by what he does. They get Tyreek Hill in, of course. Jalen Waddle is going to be spectacular. I think that Tua, though, is the obvious question mark. You know, how is his development in Mike McDaniel's system? How good can he be in that system that Mike McDaniel's got? By the way, the Bills, they open with the Rams on Thursday on the road. That's a great game. That could be a Super Bowl preview for the first game of the year. And also, they are number one in ESPN's preseason power ranking poll. Miami, they open against the New England Patriots at home. They are 19th in ESPN's power rankings poll. I think the Dolphins finished second in the division. Finishing third in the AFC East, I've got the New England Patriots. Offensive questions, I think, will be difficult to overcome for this team. So the question is, can Mac Jones get comfortable in year two? And not that he's uncomfortable, but given that there's no offensive coordinator, there doesn't seem to be a good plan offensively. Can they get something that Mac Jones can take advantage of and they can hurt defenses by? Or is this going to be like last year where we have Mac Jones throwing three passes in a game and they somehow win the game? Defensively, I think they're going to be good. They'll be in a lot of games, but you know, for them to take the next step, they need to have a good offensive plan, and Mac Jones has got to be able to execute it. I think Mac Jones is capable of it, but you know, I think we need to see it to believe it at this point, because there's a lot of questions coming out of training camp and the preseason with this team from an offensive perspective. Fourth, I've got the Jets. There's some people who have the Jets, actually. I believe Bart Scott has the Jets finishing third in this division. I don't have the audacity to do that necessarily, or the belief in that. Zach Wilson is out. There's a report that he could play week one, even through injury. I think that would be stupid. You want your star quarterback to be healthy. That would be absolutely diabolical. And I know that Joe Flacco, you don't want to throw out there on the field, and it just doesn't sound like a good idea. But also playing Zach Wilson, the guy that you drafted last year high, and he's expected to be a franchise quarterback, I don't think that it's a good idea. So how long is he out for, and can he stay healthy the rest of the year? They play the Ravens in week one. They're 30th in ESPN's power rankings. Also, the Patriots, they're 16th. And they open at Miami, of course. But there's too many questions with the Jets. This is one of the weaker divisions in all of football, even though they have the Buffalo Bills. The Dolphins, look, I don't even know if they're going to have two teams in the playoffs out of this division. Again, we talk about how tough the AFC is. You get, in this division, the Buffalo Bills and the Dolphins, I think, are the only two teams that have a chance at it. The AFC North, you have the Bengals, the Ravens, maybe the Steelers, maybe the Browns, depending on where they're at when Deshaun Watson comes back. So there's some question marks with that division. AFC West, all four of those teams could potentially make the playoffs. That would be pretty bonkers, but I don't think that's going to happen. And then the AFC South, you've got the Colts and the Titans, who are very good. I don't know if the Dolphins even make the playoffs. I don't know if they even make it. The Bills, for sure, are a lock to make it, and they could as well be the number one seed. But we're going to see how good Tua can be. Again, we talk about playing weaker opponents. The Dolphins will play the Patriots. It's important, I say, that they get a win. Almost, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say must win for the Miami Dolphins. But I will say this, that you got to play well against your division. And especially when you look at the Dolphins' schedule this year. The other teams that they play, they play the AFC North. You're playing against the Bengals. You're playing against the Ravens. You're playing against Pittsburgh. They also play against the NFC North. You've got Green Bay. You've got Minnesota. You've got Chicago and Detroit as well on the road. Not that they're difficult, but you have them. They also play the Chargers on the road. They play San Francisco on the road. I mean, their schedule is not easy, Miami's or any of these teams in this division. So winning the division games, especially against teams you're supposed to be like the Patriots, like the Jets, must-win games for Miami if they want a chance to make the playoffs against other teams in this conference that are very, very, very good and are right there in terms of competition with them. So definitely an interesting division of preview. We're going to talk about the NFC East at the top of the hour. Up next, though, UWF, dominant win over Warner. We're going to recap that. I'll talk about some star performers in that game. And this Jarrett to Leggett connection, I'll tell you what, man, we may be in for a real treat here with UWF football. We'll be talking about that next, recapping the win that UWF had over Warner this past weekend. Also looking ahead to their game this weekend. We'll do more of that tomorrow with Will Kennedy, voice of the Argos, and as the week progresses as well. Argos talk next as the Sports Drive rolls on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Second hour here on ESPN Pensacola. We're talking about the NFC East, previewing the NFL leading up to the first week of the NFL season. First game on Thursday night, Bills at Rams. Already talked about the Bills a little bit. They are number one in ESPN's preseason power rankings. How about the NFC East, though? Let's fire up some music here. We'll talk about things a little bit. All right, so this is how I think the NFC East is going to play out. Again, I'm not giving records. I'm just giving how I think the standings will flow. I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to win the division. It's going to be tight, I would say, maybe between the Eagles and the Cowboys, though. The Eagles getting a lot of hype here, especially with some of the additions that they've made here. But I think that the Dallas Cowboys are going to win the division. Dak Prescott's going to make enough plays. He's going to step up. I think one of the burning questions, and I'll get to who they open with in that all in a minute, but I think one of the burning questions is, how well can they ignore the noise, and how well does Ezekiel Elliott play? Tony Pollard has been a valuable asset to that team for a long while. Ezekiel Elliott had a little bit of a down year last year, though. What can he do to get back? You know, is the offensive line going to stay healthy enough to block for Zeke to have a good year? Is Dak Prescott going to be good enough to balance things out? Can the run game help balance out Dak as well? There's a lot of question marks, I think, with this Dallas team. Of course, a lot of expectation and a lot of noise, but I think they're going to win the division. They are 10th in ESPN in their NFL preseason power rankings. And they open Sunday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So a test early on in the year for the Dallas Cowboys. The Philadelphia Eagles, I think, come in second in the NFC East. One of the burning questions would be, can Jalen Hurts really take the next step to be a star quarterback in this league? And not just a guy that can, that has the capability, but he really takes things over, and it's obvious and clear that he is the go-to guy and the franchise quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think he can do it, and he's got the talent around him to do it. I think Devontae Smith can take another step in the right direction. Nick Sirianni has a good team. There are some people who I'm not kidding you, are picking the Eagles to win this division. They could surprise. They are 15th in ESPN's preseason power rankings, and they open against the Lions on the road. Could be a good start for the Philadelphia Eagles if they can get that win, and I think they ought to as well. I think the Washington Commanders come in third. This is an interesting team, and this is really an interesting division as well. It's arguably the weakest. I mean, the NFC East has been kind of known for that over the last decade, it seems like. You know, the Cowboys are eh. Everybody else is like, I don't know. They're okay. They might have a surprising year, but the NFC East is normally the weaker division in the NFC. I think the Washington Commanders are going to contend potentially for a playoff appearance, but it depends on certain things. One of those being Carson Wentz. You know, can he limit mistakes and limit errors? And if, you know, does the defense have a bounce back year? They were surprisingly off last year. They didn't play as well as they did a couple of years ago. Ron Rivera looking to change that. Maybe, you know, the new name, they're the Commanders now and not the Washington football team, things might advance in the right direction a little bit further. They did get Scary Terry to agree to another deal. Big shout out to him from my hometown of Indianapolis. Very good wide receiver. Logan Thomas, you know, his ability to stay healthy can be key. And John Dotson might be a go-to guy for Carson Wentz as well and help balance that offense a little bit. So Terry McLaurin isn't the only guy just getting doubled and triple teamed even. They got a lot of talent on that offense, and of course the defense too. But we need, you know, proof that they're actually going to do that. They open against the Jaguars at home. They are 21st in ESPN's preseason power rankings. The New York Giants, sorry, but they're finishing last again in this division. Saquon staying healthy is the ultimate question, I think. Can he stay healthy? Because if he can, I think that's going to help Daniel Jones out a lot. Is this a year that... Is Daniel Jones even good enough? Is another question. I mean, we're talking about a good quarterback year in the draft. And if Daniel Jones isn't showing that he's up to par with this, I could very well see the Giants going like 2-15 and completely milking it, and they're going to get the top quarterback in the draft. Could absolutely see that. Brian Daboll's first year, though, I think this will be interesting to see how things go. There's no way in any way, shape, or form that he should be gone after this first year, though. I thought David Culley shouldn't have been gone from Houston. That was a disservice to him. I don't think Brian Daboll is going to be gone after year one. When you've got a team that's this bad, I don't think you can get rid of them and say, yeah, things didn't really work out, especially in David Culley's case where they kind of, I mean, they won four games and they were competing late down the year. I mean, I would have definitely kept him. But anyways, Brian Daboll's first year, it'll be interesting to see how things go with him at the helm as opposed to just being the offensive coordinator for a team. And his development of Daniel Jones as well. I mean, could he become Josh Allen 2.0? I don't think so, but that's going to be something interesting to follow this year as well with the New York Giants. They open against the Tennessee Titans on the road. Not a very friendly way to start if you're the New York Giants, and they are 28th in ESPN's power rankings. Again, as I said, this is one of the weaker divisions regularly in the NFC. I think there are two playoff teams, though, that come out of this division. I would say the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, again, how good is this division? Well, or how many teams make it? Well, let's also look at where they will be playing outside of their division as well. So we take a look at, for example, the Philadelphia Eagles. Their schedule, they'll be taking on, of course, the NFC East. They'll also be taking on the NFC North. So you're taking on Minnesota. They open, of course, with Detroit. They're going to be playing Green Bay. They also take on the AFC South. So you're playing the Indianapolis Colts. You're playing the Tennessee Titans. You're playing teams in that division. In addition to that, you are playing the New Orleans Saints. You're playing the Arizona Cardinals. Tough games. I mean, this is not necessarily an easy schedule by any means. They also play the Pittsburgh Steelers in a game. I don't know how well the Eagles are going to do necessarily by record prediction, but you're playing Minnesota, Green Bay, Arizona, Indianapolis, Tennessee, New Orleans. That's a tough schedule, relatively tough outside of your division. So we're talking, again, for the Eagles. You're playing Washington. You're playing New York. You better be winning those games. You're Dallas, the same thing goes. You better be beating Washington. You better be beating New York, because there are no guarantees with the way that this schedule looks. Absolutely not. You look at the Dallas Cowboys schedule, it's a little bit flipped. I would say their schedule's maybe even a little... Well, it's not even a little bit, it's a lot more difficult. So the Eagles have Arizona out of the NFC West. Oh, well, who do the Cowboys have? They've got the LA Rams. Who do they got out of the AFC North? The Eagles have the Steelers. The Cowboys have the Bengals. Who do they have out of the NFC South? The Eagles have the New Orleans Saints. Dallas has Tampa Bay week one. They do play all of, as Philly does, the NFC North teams, and they play all of the NFC South teams, or the AFC South teams, rather. So this is a difficult schedule for Dallas as well. Beat the teams who you're supposed to beat, and then from there, how good are you after that? You go 4-2 in the division, great. You're going to have to at least get 5 more wins to be in the playoffs. Tough schedule when you're playing Tampa, Cincinnati, LA, as in the Rams, the Green Bay Packers, the Minnesota Vikings, the Colts, and the Titans, all outside of your division. I mean, you're getting some of the other lighter teams like Jacksonville and Houston and Detroit and Chicago, but make no mistake about it, the NFC East has got a difficult schedule when it comes to playing teams outside of their own division. To recap, the AFC East prediction that I had, it was the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, the Patriots, and the New York Jets. And again, for the NFC East, it is the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Washington Commanders, and the New York Giants. That's how I think things shake up for those two divisions. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing the AFC and the NFC North and how I see those divisions playing out, two of the better ones in all of football. Up next, college football weekend, recapping some things. 3 things that we learned. I'll be talking about that as well as Alabama's game, dominant win. Nick Saban, you're going to hear from him. Heather Dinich as well as Myron Metcalf on who had a Heisman spotlight performance over the weekend. Some top performers, Anthony Richardson. Could he be getting one of the nods? CJ Stroud. Some of the other guys in the world of college football had some really good games. Going to hear from those folks as well as, again, 3 things. What 3 things did we learn this weekend with college football? Still have a game to go with Clemson and Georgia Tech with week 1, but we'll talk about that game as well. But what did we learn from this weekend? 5 things I told you to expect. What did we get from the weekend? We'll talk about that next as the Sports Drive continues right here on ESPN Pensacola. So many good things to go through in the world of college football. A great weekend. Mondays are the best days, I'm telling you. Right now, when we get into football season, this is what we waited all summer for. Again, talking season's done. You can box it out a little bit. This is my time now. I'm rebounding this ball. It's time to look at the TV all day on Saturday and go nowhere. I know some of you feel me. My wife had to endure. She watched some of the games, though. To her credit, she was also doing other things. But that's the beauty of Saturdays. And Sundays are coming up as well with the NFL. We are getting full on into football season. The SEC had a really good weekend. 14-1. As a matter of fact, only lost 1 game all year long, the SEC have. And that would be LSU. Ugh. Oh my. You know, it's really not... It's hard to describe how, me personally, I back up Brian Kelly. I really do. Like, I think that he's actually a very good coach. He's won everywhere he's gone. I think he's going to do fine at LSU. But there are people who are laying down the hammer. I can't wait to go to 5 Independence Bowls while a Billy Napier goes and leads Florida to a title. Probably shouldn't. That wasn't the correct Louisiana Cajun accent. You know, I should have gone with the Coach O. But look, LSU is going to be fine. They're going to be good. Is Florida back after 1 game? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I wrote this down, of course. 3 things we learned. Are they back? I don't think so. Not yet. But they're very competitive against very good teams. FSU and Florida. More on the 3 things we learned here in just a moment. But here's what Paul Feinbaum had to say about the LSU loss to the Florida State Seminoles last night.
LSU paid $10 million for that, Greeny. That was my takeaway at midnight last night, because it makes perfect sense to go for 2. He just went 99 yards. It was a perfect executed drive, and Florida State's defense is, forget, on its heels. I mean, they're on their back. And do you want to keep playing when you've played that poorly? No. And you don't want to put it in the hands of the special teams, because you've already had 2 muff punts. You've had a blocked field goal. Of course you go for two. I think it's the simplest call in the world, but Brian Kelly, being somewhat conservative, he immediately put up the one. Brian, you're not in the NFL. This is college football. Put the dagger in.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's what we see that in college football. You've got the momentum. You went right down. Again, it took them a minute and 20 seconds to go not 75 or 80 yards, 99 yards in a minute 20. And they really didn't even have to use a timeout like that neither until they got across the 50. They were humming. They had FSU on their heels, as well, Feinbaum said, on their back. Categorically true. They had all the momentum where they ran one play, and that sucker could have been done. Now, of course, FSU had the same thing where they got the ball on like the 5 yard inside the 5 yard line, and they don't fumble, the game's over with. But there's some criticism already going Brian Kelly's way, and it's hard to, I feel like Coach Kelly ought to take some responsibility for this, though, and it doesn't seem like he really does. Here's Coach Kelly after the game.
I was proud of our resolve. We battled, but, you know, we just have to learn how to play the game the right way, and that is for four quarters. We didn't play with the kind of sense of urgency that I want for four quarters, and that was evident in our play. We didn't tackle very well. We couldn't get off the field on third down. We didn't execute very well offensively.
So that's my fault in not having our guys ready. I mean, something. Two LSU players after the game, removing all resemblance of being a part of the LSU football program, including Kayshawn Booty, the wide receiver who is projected to go in the top 10 in some mock drafts. He did not have a good game, had a few drops. One, as a matter of fact, one didn't even hit his hands, it hit his number. Didn't even look ready for the play, for the ball. There was also an atrocious targeting call. And, look, not call, penalty. Because the call was correct. It was targeting. It was the most vicious targeting that I've ever seen. And I would say, without a doubt, if we made levels to targeting, there should be a normal targeting. There should be a no targeting, or there's a penalty, but there's no suspension. And then there should be whatever the heck that was last night. A full game suspension, at least. Two halves or something. That was egregious. Jumping in the air and lowering the helmet and essentially headbutting Jordan Travis. It was absolutely diabolical, that was. And it should have been officiated properly. Well, it should have been addressed properly by whoever it is, the NCAA, after the game. Yeah, this guy's gone for two halves because that was egregious. Absolutely egregious. It was clear targeting, and as a matter of fact, that's the most vicious targeting that I'd seen. I don't know if that's the worst that's happened, but that's the worst that I think anybody's really seen from a national perspective. Straight up stupid decision by number 11, I would think it was, for LSU. Alabama, in their game, continuing with the SEC talk, was absolutely dominant. 55-0 victory. The crowd showed up in big numbers. Nick Saban has been critical of the fan base not staying for games. It's like, well, stop scheduling cupcake opponents. But also at the same time, they did stay for the whole game. They were hyped up. They were excited that Alabama was dominating. Bryce Young looked really good. Jahmyr Gibbs was good. Look, Will Anderson is going to destroy the left tackle for LSU if it's anything based on what we saw yesterday. The defense was good. Again, you're playing Utah State, so that's what's expected. But after the game, Nick Saban was asked about the depth chart, and he had this to say.
Now, if Emil didn't miss 5 days of practice, I'm not sure who would have started at left guard, because there's competition at every position, which is a good thing. My biggest issue, and this may be the last time you ever get one, my biggest issue on our whole team was the day the depth chart came out. So you may have seen the last one. Y'all may have seen the last one. Because that's all you worry about. We have competition on our team. We have good players. I have, in my mind, 7 or 8 guys that can play winning football on the offensive line. I'm going to play them all. I know y'all think I'm crazy. That doesn't bother me at all. Doesn't bother me one bit.
Good for Nick Saban in saying this, too. Because, look, for some reason, he gets asked some really stupid questions, and I don't understand why. Like, he was asked today, actually, about Texas and what they present that could be a problem. And he's like, you know, you never ask about what we present to Texas that could be a problem. I think it's a fair question or a fair point here. Like, hey, how about you ask us about this? Or, you know, we understand that these guys do stuff, but what about us? Again, it's classic Coach Saban. You know, he'll go at the media a little bit, and he is allowed to do that. He should do it because, you know, that's he's the greatest college football coach of all time. I think others couldn't necessarily get away with some of those things. Steve Sarkisian has come out and said, essentially, the Alabama game isn't going to be one that defines us. Is that because you're going to get smacked? Alabama are 20-point favorites in that game. They're facing Quinn Ewers. Ajayi Hall is going to be in the game. I expect somebody to try to lay him out when he gets the ball, if he gets it. I'm just saying. I thought that was interesting, though. You know, it's not going to define us. According to Caesars, they're 19-point underdogs. And they're playing at home. I mean, good grief. Steve Sarkisian said today, quote, it's one game, you know. It's a chance for us to do what we love to do. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is thinking this is going to be the game that's going to define our program. It might not. I'm not that concerned about it. I'm more concerned about the way we play the game. Sure, but let it be known that I understand it from a coaching perspective. I get it. But out of all the teams on your schedule, Oklahoma and this Alabama game are the biggest ones of the year. Yes, Oklahoma State is big. Yes, Baylor is big as well. But in terms of games that may define how things go for you, if you get beat by Alabama at home by 30, I don't think you should expect to be able to win against Oklahoma State, Baylor, or Oklahoma. If you compete and you're only losing by 14 to Alabama, I think, okay, you know, and say they pull away late and they lose to Alabama. I mean, look, that's a really tough team that we're playing here. There's some good to come out of it. I mean, the way we play, sure, but look, I think that's how a game defines you, though, is the way that you play. Because, I mean, there's some people out there who are idiots, but there's most who I would say who report on these games that, like with the Notre Dame and Ohio State game. Notre Dame lost the game, but I think they were very impressive. Defensively, they looked very good. How they stopped the Ohio State team, I mean, if that is the Ohio State team from last year, Notre Dame are winning that football game because Ohio State couldn't stop anybody last year. That was worth a darn. They struggled to do that. They were impressive, Notre Dame were, and they lost the game. Texas can do the same thing against Alabama. They're not expected to beat them, obviously. They're 19-point dogs at home. But if they only lose by 2 touchdowns or they only lose by 10 instead of 19 or 20, I think they're going to gain a little bit of a street cred here. Like, hang on a minute. You guys are playing the best team in the country, and while you're not necessarily quote-unquote back in any regard, you are playing them tight, and you got a new quarterback, and it's the second game of the year. I mean, Miami, don't get beat like Miami did last year, where you get run out of the building by the time halftime's up there. That is not a good sign, and it could define your season. Yeah, this team's really not there at all yet. It's not necessarily going to define the season, but it's going to define you as a program where you're currently at. And when you face Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor, that's going to catch up to you by the time you play them, and it could define your season as, man, this team really ain't that good, and you're going to go 5-7 again, and you're not going to be there much longer. So I understand what he's saying a little bit, but also these games, you know, it's obviously the way you play, but the way you play can define your season and how good of a team you are at the moment. It absolutely could. So that was Alabama's big victory looking ahead to the Texas game, of course. That's one of the big ones this weekend. Arkansas were very good. Sam Pittman was very happy with his team afterwards. 31-24 victory. Tennessee absolutely beat the living daylights out of Ball State. That's no surprise. Ole Miss struggled with Troy. I thought I thought that they'd be a little bit better than that. Of course, you're playing at home. But look, Jackson Dart, again, there's question marks going into this Ole Miss season. Are they really that good? Some people think 8-4 or 9-3. I don't think they're that good. Now, again, that might just be 1 week and all that other stuff. Some butterflies, but I don't know. I don't know. Vandy's looked very good. Of course, it's Vandy, and they haven't played very good teams, but my goodness, have they have looked very good. Now, Florida looked, of course, spectacular in that win over Utah. They have Kentucky. First taste of SEC, a head coaching experience for Billy Napier. The Gators are favored by 7 in that game, actually, against Kentucky. It is in the swamp. Kentucky are going to be in the top 25. Florida may well hop into that top 25. That's going to be one of the better games of the week as well. But three things we learned. Georgia look absolutely legit. 49-3, you destroy Oregon. Stetson Bennett looked very, very good. Had a great game. They ran the ball well with Kenny McIntosh and others. The defense looked absolutely spectacular. Michigan, I thought, also looked good. I won't go as far as to say they're as legit looking as Georgia, of course, because Michigan played Colorado State. But last year, outside of Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, they had 9 sacks all year. In week one, they had 7. And again, you're playing Colorado State, but it looks like they've got guys to come in and replace the losses that they had on defense. Number two I've got written down is that Ohio State and Notre Dame were impressive. Here is Heather Dinich, from what she said earlier, kind of going along with what I said about how Ohio State, they absolutely impressed, but I think Notre Dame showed a lot as well.
Notre Dame should still be talked about in the college football conversation. That defense was outstanding in the first half. I don't think Ohio State fans should be panicking at all. I thought Ryan Day had a great message post-game, which was we had to gut it out and win in a way we weren't used to. And to be able to play defense, run the ball. Man, guys, Harry, you were there. That fourth quarter drive that lasted 7 minutes. And C.J. Stroud in that moment completing 9 of 10 passes in the fourth quarter was outstanding. But to me, the big takeaway was Notre Dame just put forth such a gutsy effort. Let's keep talking about them until they give us a reason not to.
I've absolutely looked. And again, Tyler Buchner, I thought, played pretty well. Ohio State's defense was very impressive because last year they would have not been able to only let Notre Dame get 10 points. They would have been worse than that. Mayan Williams was spectacular down the stretch. Travion Henderson will be very good. C.J. Stroud had some bumps and bruises without Jackson Smith and Jigba. Other guys stepped up, though, and I thought it was a very hard-earned win. And as Heather Dinich said, Ryan Day said that they needed the game like that. You know, a hard-nosed, good, gutsy type of win that's lower scoring. They're one of the best teams in the country. I stand by that. And Notre Dame, I think, impressed to be one of the better teams in the country as well. Number three, I put FSU and UF maybe back. They are not yet, let's be honest. FSU are 2-0. Much better than the way they started last year, obviously. Going forward, how do they continue to build and progress as the season goes on? Florida, same thing. They beat Utah, but how do they bounce back and go, or how do they move from last weekend or from this past weekend to this weekend where they're taking on a Kentucky team that a lot of people think can be the only challenger in that division to Georgia? I would say Tennessee more than Kentucky, but if Florida beat Kentucky, I mean, hang on a second, not to say that they are going to beat Georgia, but that game is going to be a little bit more interesting than it was maybe thought to be at the beginning of the year. Absolutely. Heisman Spotlight. Myron Medcalf had some thoughts. He was asked on who he thought had the biggest game in the week one of the college football season and maybe got themselves some attention in terms of the Heisman talk.
In terms of the spotlight, I think it's on Anthony Richardson because it's not just the performance in prime time against a top 10 Utah team and pulling out the win. It's the spotlight that followed. It's the social media buzz. I think there are a lot of people who didn't really know who Anthony Richardson was because he wasn't really used last season. But I think he, to me, is at the top of the list after what we've seen over the course of the weekend.
I wonder how bad, and let me also say this, Emory Jones transferred to Arizona State. He looked really good in their game. Granted, it's against Northern Arizona. But I think Dan Mullen looks worse now. Even when he did, even than he did last year when he was playing Emory Jones ahead of Anthony Richardson. Like, you were, like, this guy barely got used last year? Really? And I think that was just Dan Mullen's loyalty to a fault to Emory Jones. I like the loyalty part. I understand it, but there's a certain time when you've got to move on, especially when you're talking about the, you know, your job. I think that decision to not play Anthony Richardson, maybe it didn't help Dan Mullen at all. And I think he looks a little bit worse for it. Because Anthony Richardson is a complete stud. He absolutely got the most buzz over the weekend in terms of sheer hype. As Myron said, I agree with him fully there. You look, I mean, Bryce Young obviously is in the discussion. Bijan Robinson had an okay game. They played against Louisiana Monroe. That's a look. This weekend's going to define a little bit more, I think, of where we go from here. Florida playing Kentucky, Anthony Richardson, you know, how does he look? Bryce Young, you're going against Texas, vice versa. Bijan Robinson, you're going against Alabama. You know, how do these guys look in these games in terms of the Heisman conversation, if you will? Those are some of the guys who are favored or in the discussion already. I mean, how does Will Anderson look against Texas as well? Could be a guy to watch in that. And Ohio State, as they move forward, two easier games. Arkansas State, Toledo, then they have Wisconsin in week four. Wisconsin, the Badges, my team, looked really good over the weekend, of course, but they played Illinois State. So neither here nor there. A lot of really impressive teams over the weekend, looking good. Top 25 is probably going to come out tomorrow as we have the matchup between Clemson at number 4 ranked Clemson and Georgia Tech tonight. Before we go to break, I think Clemson is going to destroy Georgia Tech. It's going to be like 49-10, 49-7, I think, is the victory. Georgia Tech lost so much. They do still have Jeff Sims, but they don't have Jahmyr Gibbs. They only returned like two starters on defense and only a couple on offense as well. They're going to really struggle, and I feel bad for Jeff Collins because this could be a make-or-break year for him, and their team's just not good. They might surprise, though. Even more shocking than Florida beating Utah and FSU beating LSU the way that they did would be Georgia Tech knocking off Clemson without a doubt at all whatsoever. But I don't think that's going to happen. That game coming up as well, by the way, right after the show is done on ESPN. Up next, we're talking about the Saints and the Jaguars ahead of their first games of the season. Who do they play? What are some of the headlines? And where does each team rank in ESPN's power rankings? We're going to talk about that next on the other side of the break as the Sports Drive continues right here on ESPN, Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Sports Drive continuing here on ESPN, Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. All right, so we're talking about the Saints and the Jaguars in this segment. The NFL season is almost upon us, and of course, you know, being in the Panhandle, Larry, got to talk about, you know, the Saints and Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, of course, the team that we follow, among the others. But New Orleans is, and they've got more expectations than Jacksonville for this year, just in terms of sheer competitiveness. They've got a team that's built to win. They're not as young. They do have a couple of questions, though, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Some of the headlines regarding this team. They start off on the road against the Atlanta Falcons, 12 p.m. You'll be able to watch it on Fox at noon. Expectations, I would say. I don't know if they're Super Bowl expectations. Keyshawn Johnson's already said, look, they're going to the Super Bowl. Bart Scott has said New Orleans is a team to watch. There are a lot of people that are high on New Orleans. They've got a team that is legit. But the question comes down, again, we talk about making it to a Super Bowl as the expectation or winning one for this year. Can Jameis Winston be that dude for a whole 17-game-plus year? Elite quarterbacks are going to win you Super Bowls. That's what they do. This team is talented enough to contribute to that. But can Jameis Winston, and I'm not saying that he can't, because last year before he got injured and tore that ACL, he looked really good. Completion percentage wasn't that great, though, but they were winning games. And maybe that's all that he needs to do, is be serviceable and take care of the football like he was last year up until he got hurt. And the team's going to take care of the rest. They've got a good defense. They've got a lot more weapons this year, of course. Michael Thomas comes back. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Chris Olave, they draft. Jarvis Landry, they bring in. They got Alvin Kamara still. Adam Troutman at tight end. They draft Trevor Penning. the tackle from Northern Iowa. You know, there's a lot to like. You still got Demario Davis. You bring in Tyrann Mathieu, Cameron Jordan. You got a really good team in all levels. Can Jameis Winston make the plays to go and win you games when you need to? That's one of the headlines, I think, for this year, is that they're so talented, but also Jameis has that talent around him, and all it takes is him. Because you can't tell me right now, out of all the quarterbacks in the league, and they're ranked 20th, by the way, the Saints are, in ESPN's preseason poll. 20th. You can't tell me that you need a two-minute drill to go and win you a playoff game on the road. Now, mind you, at home, even. You cannot tell me that Jameis Winston is in your top five quarterbacks you would select to do that. I don't even know if you'd put him in your top 10 quarterbacks that you would trust to go right down the field in 2 minutes and lead a two-minute drill. That's where, hey, we got the team to win a Super Bowl. The question is, though, do we have the quarterback to do it? Do we have the quarterback to get the job done? That, to me, is the big question. Health has also been a headline. Michael Thomas, you know, yeah, he's coming back, but he's been dealing with some nicks and bruises, a hammy now bothering him, not just the ankle. Alvin Kamara's off the field issue. His availability seems to be put away, at least for the season. Jameis Winston's health, had the foot issue. Is he really good to go? It seems like he is. Are they a threat to win the NFC? That is one of the big questions. Keyshawn Johnson says yes. Bart Scott says yes. I say, oh, I don't know, maybe. I would say no right now. I need to see it to believe it. That's where I'm at right now with the New Orleans Saints. Again, they are 20th in the ESPN preseason poll power rankings. I would not put them that low, but I don't think they're inside the top five at all. They might, I would say they're inside the top 10 because they got a good enough team around Jameis that if he is that guy last year, again, if he is that guy before he got hurt, they're going to be very good. And they may challenge Tampa Bay and win that division in all seriousness. But I want to see it to really believe it because Jameis, again, not too many. I think he learned a lot from Drew Brees, but he's still the guy that threw 30 interceptions. He is the same person. And he had some bad throws last year. Can he be more consistent and limit errors this year? That's the big question with Jameis Winston. Again, they start off the year on the road at Atlanta at 12 p.m. on Sunday. Speaking of 12 p.m. on Sunday, the Jacksonville Jaguars are on the road as well against the Washington Commanders. The expectations for them, I would say, are anywhere from 5 to 7 wins. The offense needs to capitalize and finish drives more. They struggled to do that a little bit in the preseason, and that was something of note. Trevor Lawrence, I think a headline could be a bounce back year. You know, 12 touchdowns to 17 picks. Not a good year for TL. Not a good one. But that doesn't mean that he can't bounce back. He's got a more adept head coach to the NFL. He's got a better head coach, period, I think, in terms of leading a group of players and dealing with the egos that come along with NFL teams. And he's won a Super Bowl. Doug Peterson knows exactly what he's doing. And Trevor Lawrence and him have a good relationship already. Travis Etienne has looked very good, looking to bounce back from what was a season-ending injury last year during the preseason. If he's ready to go, which he looks like he is, I think he's going to have a spectacular year. You've got Christian Kirk. You've got James Robinson. You've got a very young team, but they're very capable. The culture change, I think, is another headline for this Jaguars team, just with the new head coach and Doug Peterson coming in and the disaster that was last year, both on and off the field. I think Doug Peterson is setting something straight, and they've got a lot of positive vibes heading into this year. And they can really start off the season on a high note on the road in Washington. ESPN in their preseason power rankings, they put Jacksonville in 27th, which I think is fair. I would say Jacksonville will find themselves maybe in the lower 20s by the time the year's done. I think 5 to 7 wins is, I don't even know if 5 to 7 is the expectation necessarily. Maybe that's my expectation. I think they will be better. I think they'll be a lot more competitive. And I think they may win some games that they're not necessarily expected to. I think that they'll be good. Trevor Lawrence will continue to grow. And you know, the whole idea, well, is Trevor Lawrence really that good? It's like, yeah, look at what he was dealing with. I think this will be the really good indicator on how he grows throughout the season and looking forward how good he may potentially be with the Jacksonville Jaguars and in the NFL. One final break. When we come back, talking about Serena Williams. Yes, she lost in the third round, falls in a match that she could have very well put away, but fell late. An emotional scene afterwards, of course. But Margaret Court had some comments on Serena. We'll talk about that. And is Serena Williams the greatest tennis player of all time, men or women? Categories there. We'll talk about that, regardless of gender. Also, NASCAR, a wild, wild, wild first playoff race in Darlington. The implications and also some of the questions I think that NASCAR may have to ask themselves. We'll talk about that next and also preview what's coming up tomorrow as well. More Sports Drive after the break on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Unfortunately for Serena, this could be it. Unfortunately for fans as well, it could be it because it's been such a joy watching Serena Williams and just her dominance in the sport. I talked about it a little bit last week with Tiger Woods and the comparison of black athletes being involved in sports that predominantly have not had very many African Americans at all. And to be not only in the sport at a high level, at a high professional level, but to dominate them in the way that Tiger and Serena have is so inspiring, and it's so great that when you see them start to dwindle a little bit, like we've seen with Serena and with Tiger over the last few years, with Serena post giving birth to a child, Tiger Woods post accident, and just post 2010, it's been tough as they get older, and as competition continues to grow, that you really learn. Okay, you really need to. You really need to appreciate what you have before it's gone. And this is something very, very bleak. It's not as bad as they're not passing away. Thank heavens that Serena Williams is still alive and everything like that. I'm not going there. It's just, you're not going to see her in a national capacity playing tennis anymore. Tiger Woods, eventually we're going to get there. LeBron James, eventually we're going to get there. You really don't know what you're missing until all of a sudden they're no longer playing anymore. And you're like, holy crap, I really miss Serena Williams. Seeing her name in the leaderboard. Yeah, I can't stand not seeing Tiger Woods play golf anymore. It's crazy that he's not playing anymore when that day comes. And Tiger said it's coming. But Serena Williams, she is, to me, the greatest female tennis player without a doubt all time. I think her and Roger Federer, look, there's, I don't even know if you can, they're all goats, to be honest with you. Her and, I consider her right in the realm of Roger Federer, Rafa, and Novak Djokovic. They are all, that is the tennis Mount Rushmore, if you want to put them on a Mount Rushmore. That is it. They are in that category by themselves. No other female tennis player is touching Serena Williams. No other male tennis player, I think outside of Rafa, Roger, and Novak are in that realm with Serena Williams either. She is the greatest tennis player. She's one of the greatest tennis players, one of the greats. One of the great tennis players of all time. One of the greatest in that top four all time, period. She might be one, she might be two, she might be three, she might be four. I don't know. But she's in that category of greatness. Now, I told you that Margaret Court had some things to say. It was a perceived snub, and from even the tennis media. So, Margaret Court spoke with the Telegraph in a rare interview following Serena's evolution from tennis announcement. She said, quote, Serena, I've admired her as a player, but I don't think she has ever admired me. I thought it was bad that Williams didn't mention her opponent more when she spoke. We were taught to honor our opponent. We respected one another. I mean, come on. She also discussed differences she's in the open era contrasted to when she played. She said, quote, I would love to have played in this era. I think it's so much easier. How I would have loved to have taken family or friends along with me, but I couldn't. I had to go on my own or with the national team. People don't see all that. We don't have psychologists or coaches with us. It's a whole different world. That's what disappoints me, that players today don't honor the pass of the game. Listen, it doesn't need to be in that space where Serena needs to say, oh yeah, shout out to Margaret Court, shout out to Chrissy Everett, shout out to Billie Jean King. Serena Williams, listen, Serena Williams in Margaret Court's day may not have even been allowed to play tennis, period. And she already went, she went through crappy as well. So in terms of easy, I don't want to hear it from me comparing myself to Serena Williams, because Margaret Court had it easier from just an upbringing standpoint to get where she did. Again, as Serena credited her dad and her parents, and without Venus, there would be no Serena, and you see the King Richard movie, and you understand what she went through to get there in a sport that, again, does not have very many African-American presence at all whatsoever. It is not easier for Serena Williams to get where she got to. Needless to say, to win 23 Grand Slam titles. Come on, back off the comments. I think it's a little bit of hating there by Margaret Court, who is, again, 24 Grand Slam titles. Absolutely phenomenal. But Serena Williams dominated for a very long time against good, better competition. She's the greatest of all time. NASCAR, real quick, before we end. A wild first race. Eric Jones steals the race. NASCAR has some answers, I think, into how these cars are screwing up. Blown engines. Kyle Busch blew his engine during the caution, which I was shocked by. Martin Truex Jr. was losing power. Kevin Harvick caught fire in the middle of the race, and NASCAR didn't throw a caution until he was getting out of his car. It took him forever. I was shocked that they didn't do that. I don't know what the heck the deal is, but there was some craziness going on in that race. And the way that NASCAR's handled things the past couple of races, I find questionable, with the rain at Daytona and then not throwing the caution with Kevin Harvick until then, and also the status of these cars where you're running fine out of nowhere, the car dies on you, there's no contact, there's no nothing, the car just catches on fire. Like, what is triggering that? But the playoff drivers struggled. Chase Elliott, wrecked out of the race, was clear and above the number one driver in the playoff rankings standings. Now he's just above the cut line, not too far from it. So there's no guarantees in the playoffs, and we are hitting that point now with NASCAR. A crazy race at Darlington. They're at Kansas next, and then Bristol before the round of 16 ends. But that's going to do it for the show. Thank you so much for listening. A wild, wild weekend in sports. Can't wait until next weekend. We're going to be recapping some stuff tomorrow. We're going to talk about the AFC and NFC North preview. Also, some more CFP playoff expansion talk. You're going to hear from Greg Sankey, Dan Orlovsky, and also Will Kennedy, voice of the Argos, is going to join for the show. Again, thank you for listening. Catch you tomorrow for more Sports Drive at 5. Till then, peace. Talk to you tomorrow.